compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, we're back, and thanks for listening to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. My number is 888-914-9149. If you're just tuning in, hope you had a great holiday weekend. I hope it was restful. We are back in the battle now. 888-914-9149. Speaking of battling, I shared just before we went to the last hour break that there's a real resurgence of, well, I shouldn't say a resurgence. There is a surge of unruly passengers on commercial airliners that are, it's resulting in a lot of problems, including, I mean, if you consider this to be a problem, I think many people would, but in the already restrictive atmospheres during, since COVID, when airlines shut down food service and most of the beverage service, well, they had planned, American, Delta, United, Southwest, they had planned to start phasing back in alcohol sales in the main cabin. So if you want your beer or your wine or what have you, you used to be able to order it. Now you can order it, or at least that was the plan until the FAA and the flight attendants unions and others were saying, wait a minute, we have a problem here. Just in the last 4 months, going on 5 months now, I guess, they have detailed along the lines of like 2,500 incidents of unruly passengers. To the point where just this past week, a flight attendant, she had her two teeth knocked out. An unruly passenger who didn't want to wear the mask and was told to by the flight attendant wound up in a scuffle with her, punched her in the face. I saw the video of it. You can see it. It's out there. And a big, big passenger, he stands up and he makes her, he subdues her. Not physically, he doesn't touch her, but he, the voice of authority, you might say. But it's coming to blows, literally. Now, those of us who are old enough to remember 9/11, that in itself brings up some very unpleasant connotations about people who are getting up and not complying in the cockpit. I think it is in the years since 9/11, I would think, and it seems to me that it was the case, that people were more respectful of the cabin crew, more respectful of the pilots because of what happened on 9/11. But in any case, it's resurging, or it's surging now, let's just say. So they're going to cut back on the alcohol. Now, here's my theory. I told you I had a theory. Now, I may be wrong about this. I don't think I am, but I could be wrong. And if I am wrong, I'll be happy to admit it. But I think that what we saw in the last year, and even before that a bit, with violent demonstrations, and I'm not talking about peaceful protesting. That's different. We have a right to protest peacefully. We have a right to peaceably assemble, as the Constitution provides. We have that right, and I like that right, and I want to protect that right. But this is not the same as that. This being people who are smashing plate glass windows, destroying public property, defacing public property, torching police cars, vandalizing, that kind of non-peaceful, non-demonstration demonstrations. We were served up a big heaping helping of that all last year. Remember?
It's hard to forget.
Remember?
Hard to forget.
Hard to forget. But I think some people have already forgotten. So here's my theory in a nutshell, Cyrus. I'd like to get your take on it, because maybe I am off base on this one. But I've been thinking about this a lot, and I've been thinking to myself, you know, why is this happening? What is contributing to this? And the best thing I can come up with is people have been watching other people, and maybe the people watching the other people were in those crowds as well. They've been watching people get what they want by using violence, by using verbal violence. It happens all the time on social media. But the use of verbal violence and physical violence, even to the point of trying to assert their will and bend other people to their will by being in the streets, chanting slogans, destroying property, attacking people, or restaurants, having a nice meal, and you know, whatever the group du jour is, comes along and is using verbal violence and in some cases physical violence to get what they want, to coerce people. We've seen a lot of that. And people only have so much rope, at the end of which they tend to, go berserk in some cases. So, Cyrus, that's my theory. I mean, I could elaborate, but I don't think I need to. In general, I think that people are being conditioned to see using violence to get what they want as a viable option.
I was going to disagree with you about the violence that we saw on the streets and the protests and riots, but then you brought up social media, and I think there is a direct connection with people lashing out. So there's something really detrimentally wrong with social media, and I see it in children, and I see it in adults. People that spend all the time just scrolling, you know, with their little their finger is just scrolling, and they're just looking at these little 10, 15 second bits over and over again. I see their depression going way up, and when you're depressed, you are more likely to lash out. So I think social media definitely has an impact on this.
I agree.
And I think this last year, I think we might be experiencing some form of PTSD from being isolated and wearing masks, not seeing people's smiles. A smile says so much about what someone is thinking. I mean, I'd walk in a grocery store and everyone's wearing a mask, and it just felt like everyone was mad. But I wasn't mad. Yeah. I'm just wearing a mask. And so I was like, well, maybe they think I'm mad because they can't see that I'm smiling. I can only smile so much with my eyes. Most of the smile is with, your mouth.
What about jazz hands? You always use jazz hands to
It's hard to
thoughts.
Do jazz hands when I'm pushing the cart. I tried, and I push it with my belly.
Have your kid push the cart. That way you can do your jazz hands
now,
to everybody you meet.
There you are. So
I'd like a video of that, by the way. I'll post that on social media.
You know what?
They'll rip you apart on social media. You'll probably
find a video that's not me and post it and say, this is Cyrus.
Oh, hey, that's a good idea.
But
let's see what Margaret thinks. And by the way, I'm going to circle back to you, Cyrus, because I want to find out why you disagree with my theory. I've got a few more tidbits.
But I do agree with it. Now that you brought in the social media aspect of it, you turned me around. I think you're on to something.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, I mean, don't you think there's at least, even without the social media, but I do agree with you. I think that's definitely part of this. Doesn't it seem at least reasonable to wonder what effect does it have on people to see this massive humanity going into the streets and smashing and burning and looting and even killing to get what they want? And then federal government, state governments, local governments, they just sort of back away. And it's like, okay, if that's what you got to do, this is the voice of the people. It's teaching people to use violence to get what they want. And that's never the right solution. Never. Mm-hmm. And I think the chickens are coming home to roost now. Ponder that. Let's talk to Margaret in Colorado Springs. Ponder that, Cyrus. Hi, Margaret. What do you think about this?
Hi. Well, I agree with your theory. But going back to the airplane, alcohol on the airplane, so I flew about a month ago, and I was in the airport, and I happened to be sitting somewhere where I was observing this young man drinking, and he was getting drunk. He was drunk, and I just thought, oh, gosh, I don't know if they should be serving alcohol in these bars in the airport. And then I got on the plane, sat down, and a guy was in the bathroom, came out, was walking up further, and the flight attendants had to tell him, sir, this is your seat. Well, it ended up that he sat right next to me. And it was scary because he was very drunk and you could hardly understand him, but he was loud and saying things to the flight attendants, to me. And so it was a little scary. They came to me and they had to pull him and they had to talk to him. And then they came to me and said, do you feel okay here? Do you feel safe? Well, there was no other seat in the plane. So I said, well, I'll just stay here, So that could be a problem too, alcohol in the airport.
That's another good point.
I'm sorry?
Where did they put him? Well, what I'm saying is, did they just leave him in the seat next to you or did they move him elsewhere?
No, they just they asked me how I felt. And so knowing that there were no other seats on the airplane, I just said, it was already delayed. Our flight was very delayed already, and they were having to talk to him. And I guess they were deciding if they were going to keep him on or take him off. I don't know.
Was this during the flight or before the flight had taken off? I mean, were you already in the air when this was going on?
Yeah, before the flight had taken off.
Okay. Yeah. I don't want to second guess them because, I mean, I don't know what all goes into their decision making. But just off the cuff as man on the street, my thought is if there's even a hint that this guy's going to be a problem, and if he already is a problem and he's inebriated, that's a one-way ticket off the plane.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Yeah, well, they didn't take him off. Me. And
So your point... Go ahead, Margaret.
I was just going to say that. So he kind of passed out a little bit, and but if he was touched or anything, he would. It seemed like he was starting to wake up. So I finally tried to stay as far away so that I wouldn't budge him or anything, so that he wouldn't wake up, because I was a little nervous through the whole
flight.
Were
you on the window seat?
No, I was in the middle.
Okay.
And he was at the window seat.
Oh boy. Yeah, the window seats are the most uncomfortable. Well, I'm glad it turned out okay. Thank you, Margaret. I appreciate the call. Cyrus, to kind of weave what Margaret was saying.
I was just thinking, you were saying that they allow drinks in first class and not, you know, anywhere else. They don't call it second class, but we get it. Maybe these airport bars should have a first class passport and only first class flyers.
I don't think that would ever fly.
Oh, I see what you did.
That'll
there.
Never get off the ground, right. Cyrus.
Okay.
You get it?
Yes, unfortunately. Yeah. All right. What were you going to ask me?
Well, no, I mean, just, I don't think that would fly.
And I was kidding. But that was a joke.
It was? It sounded like you're making a serious effort.
I was not. No, I think it's ridiculous that first class can fly, can drink, and the rest can't.
Yeah,
that's literally classism.
Well, it is, and exactly. So, if you have a first class, in the world of like frequent flyers, there are like in major airports, there are clubs for people who pay the annual membership fee. So like Admiral's Club for American Airlines. I'm a member. But then they have another club. It's called a flagship club. And you can't go in there if you don't have a first class boarding pass for the flight that day. If you have a first class boarding pass for the flight, you can go in and it's a much higher level of service. There's much more food, much more alcohol. It's a nicer environment and it caters to people who have that. That does happen. But they do discriminate in favor of people who have the first class boarding pass. But I think I think the average person walking through the airport doesn't even know that that exists. They're not aware of it. But if they wanted to sit down and have a hamburger and a beer, and they were told, "I'm sorry, you can have a Coke, but you can't have a beer because you're sitting in the wrong cabin of service," I think people would have a problem with that. And I could see why.
Yeah, me too.
Here's a cup of milk, sir. With your,
we just want to make sure you stay calm. In fact, it's a warm glass of milk to help you go nighty night on the plane.
Because you paid the cost for your ticket was low enough that we don't even refrigerate the milk for people in that cost bracket. So here's a little bit more to my theory. Then we can move on. 888-914-9149. I want to extend it just a little bit more. So COVID took place in 2020, but simultaneously, of course, we had the horrendous problems, first of all, with the killing of George Floyd, but that sparked an uprising that was all around the country. And again, I want to underscore, I'm not against in any way, or I'm not opposed to in any way, people exercising their First Amendment rights to peaceably assemble. The right to free speech is important. So I honor that and appreciate that. I'm exercising that right myself right now. But what I object to is the use of violence to get what you want in the form of destroying buildings, defacing buildings, et cetera. And this extends to things like pulling down statues and destroying monuments just because you don't like what that person might have thought or believed 150, 200 years ago. That's another form of using violence to get what you want. And we've been treated, as I say, to a big heaping helping of that for the last couple of years. So it's not just during COVID. It's not just since the time of George Floyd. And to extend this just one step further, for the last 20 years or so, there has been a simmering cauldron of seething anger that has, I think, affected most of the country politically. So we saw this. I think I really became aware of it in the 1980s, especially when CNN and some of the other mainstream news outlets, they turned decidedly against Ronald Reagan. And that's when I first began to really notice this kind of bias in the media. It doesn't mean it wasn't there before, but that's when I began to notice it. That's when I began to be aware of it, might be a better way to put it. And there were these snarky pot shots and misrepresentations. And then, of course, by the time we get to Bill Clinton, now you've got the other side of the country, the more conservative folk who are chafing under the Bill Clinton. And then the Monica Lewinsky thing happened and the impeachment happened and all that. So there was a great deal of pent up frustration and even anger. Then we move to the George W. Bush presidency, 8 years of that. And that's where I think it really ramped up. I mean, they were releasing one in particular that I recall was a feature film that was produced about the assassination of George W. Bush. Whether you liked him or didn't like him politically, the idea of glamorizing the assassination of any president, regardless of his political affiliations, is reprehensible. The idea of glamorizing, popularizing, and maybe putting it into the minds of people that, gee, you know, who will rid me of this meddlesome priest, as the king was said to have said about Thomas Becket, who was not going along with the program. And so his henchmen heard him say this, and they thought, well, that's telling us that we better go kill him, and they did. They showed up in Canterbury Cathedral, and they killed him while he was at the altar about to celebrate Mass. In any case, so then we have, during the George W. Bush, we had the Gulf War, weapons of mass destruction, Bush lied and people died, and it really became a kind of fever pitch. And the hatred and opprobrium for him that was nothing like that at the time of Ronald Reagan, or even, for that matter, Bill Clinton. Then we went to the Obama administration. So it's kind of the pendulum is swinging back and forth. And now the other side of the country is antagonized because of the abortion issue and other issues. And then, you know what I'm saying? Then it goes to Donald Trump. And that in itself is a study in hysteria and the people who just could not keep it together. They were losing their minds with this derangement about that president, Donald Trump. And now we have Joe Biden. And it just seems to be getting worse and worse and worse. Who was that? Representative Steve Scalise, a congressman. He and a bunch of other Republicans were practicing for a baseball game two, three years ago, whatever it was. And a Democratic left-wing guy shot a bunch of them. And nobody died, thankfully. But it was sort of overlooked by the mainstream media because, oh, well, you know, it's just a lone gunman and these things happen kind of thing. Had it been the other political party, it would have been news wall to wall. So my point is simply this, Cyrus, if your eyes are glazing over, we have been simmering in this cauldron of increasingly ratcheted up tensions and anger and resentment and fury and payback and the politics of destruction. And then it exploded onto the streets. And then we're seeing people who are smashing and destroying and pulling down statues just because they can. And the people in authority are timid or fearful or complicit, and they stand back and they do nothing. So I think what has happened is we've evolved to the point where people think, and maybe it's to some extent rightfully so because they've seen it work, they believe that using violence to get what you want is the thing to do. So that's why I think maybe we're seeing this massive surge of unruly passengers on airlines, because people have been brought to this point where they figure, well, I'm going to shout and kick and fuss and I'm going to, you know, punch or do whatever I need to do because it works and people will get out of my way. And that, of course, doesn't work, especially if you're that woman who punched out the flight attendant. What do you think?
Well, you might be onto something. you might be onto something.
Well, maybe I'm not. As I said at the beginning, I could be wrong, but I'm trying. Okay, help me out here. What's an alternative explanation that could account for it?
People are at the end of their ropes. I don't know. I don't have an answer.
And I don't know. I mean, it remains to be seen. I think PhD dissertations could be written about this topic.
Yeah, they'll be studying it in school for many years. Okay, please do.
Indeed. All right, well, enough of that. That's not a happy topic.
No. Just be kind. Be kind to your neighbor. Be kind to the guy sat next to you in the airport.
I try.
Yeah, not you.
I know. Oh, speaking of kind, China has not been kind to Fast and Furious 9, which was released in the box office. Remember when played
John Cena apologized.
He did, in Chinese, too.
Aw.
Yeah, because he said that Taiwan is a country.
How dare he?
And China, of course, they reared up on their hind legs. And here's how the Daily Wire is reporting it. Turns out that John Cena's apology to the Chinese Communist government for referring to Taiwan as a country may have been for naught. And I know this makes you sad, Cyrus, because you really care, right? Just kidding. I know you don't care. But a lot of people do care about this. According to the Hollywood Reporter, the latest installment of the Fast and Furious franchise, F9, dropped 85% in the Chinese box office during its second weekend following a strong opening of $136
million. That's a lot of Fs.
Have you ever earned $136 million in one weekend?
No. Serious question? No.
Yeah, serious question.
No.
Okay, let's start from the beginning. Cyrus, I have a serious question for you.
Uh-huh.
Have you ever earned $136 million in one weekend?
Let's add up all the money I've ever earned in my entire life, and we won't even get close to that.
I take that as a no.
That's a no. It's a hard
no. Okay. After two laps, the Vin Diesel-John Cena action flick has totaled $185.3 million. That's slightly ahead of where the franchise spinoff Hobbs and Shaw. Blah, 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 blah. Chinese ticketing.
That's what I think of those movies.
I don't care about that. I really don't. Chinese ticketing app. Oh, is it time? It's time.
It's time.
All right. Well, enough of this story. Anyway, so John Cena's apology didn't really work, and down 85%. I guess I would just say, who cares? The Chinese government cares. I don't care. I'll be right back with more right after this. Today's programming sponsored by Solidarity HealthShare. Information on their health plans available at CatholicHealthShare.com. That's CatholicHealthShare.com.
Get connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
Let's go!
We are back. Thanks for listening to the Patrick Madrid Show. My number is 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Mike in Lexington.
Hey, before we go to calls, some tweets have come in about what we were just talking. We just spent a little bit of time talking about violence and unrest and people acting out on airplanes. And it's just we're seeing it more and more and more. And Bill Moody just tweeted, man, he's an insightful gentleman.
He's a good guy.
Yeah, he really seems like it. He says, agree with you on violence. It's a reflection of a breakdown of a commonly accepted ethical and moral framework and the inconsistent, often non-existent, response to law-breaking by civil authorities.
Ooh, he really nailed it. Yeah. The lack of response in many cases. That's a good point, Bill.
Yeah, thanks, Bill.
Yeah, thanks for catching that. Bill is a charter member of Team Taco, by the way. All hail Bill Moody. He's a good guy. I've met him and his wife, Sharon, before. They're good people, really good people. Well, Bill, thanks for weighing in on that. Do we have any other tidbits from Twitter?
I saw one from Bishop Wall, but I'm not seeing it.
Oh, yeah. He said, where did it go? I just had it here a second ago. He said, I'm not finding it. Oh, yeah. He sent a note saying that he agreed with my theory.
Cool.
So there you go, Cyrus.
Yep. Well, if they both agree with you, you cannot be wrong.
888-914-9149. Let's go back to Mike in Lexington, Kentucky. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Patrick. Just to follow up on your comments about the unruly passengers on aircraft, do you see a parallel in the mistrust, lack of trust in authorities to keep peace and stability with the rise in background checks and gun sales? and not just
interesting
males, but certainly females as well. Each month since about last January succeeds the previous month in the number of background checks.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a general consensus, at least people in their gut, in their mind, are thinking, I don't like the way things are going, and as a result, I feel like I'm more on my own when police stand down or political leaders tell police to stand down. Therefore, in order to protect me and my family and my property, I may have to resort to that Second Amendment, not necessarily violence, but defend, you know, again, life and our property. So I don't know if there's a parallel there, but generally speaking, a lot of movement in that area would seem to indicate that people are losing trust in former government, state, and local institutions to provide for peace and stability.
You're onto something there, and I agree with you, Mike. I think it was last week, I shared some information from CBS that gun stores nationwide are seeing an increase in customers. This is a quote from their article that I shared. The FBI said there were almost 16 million background checks for firearm purchases during the first 4 months of this year. That's a 31% increase compared to the same time in 2020. So there's no doubt that there is a definite uptick in gun sales, as evidenced by these statistics. Now, what is the cause of that? I don't think it's unreasonable to ask the question, is it maybe because of the police departments that are being defunded? And if instead of a police officer coming to your assistance, some guy with a clipboard shows up, maybe, how are you going to deal with somebody who's threatening you or your family? And I could see easily why many people would say, well, the only person left to defend is me. So, you know, for better or for worse, I wonder if people are sensing that maybe the police won't be there for them. It's interesting, too, Mike, that the people who are ramrodding these things through, like, as I recall last year, if memory serves, the city council for the city of Minneapolis, I remember seeing some news about how, as they were in the process of defunding the police department, they were also hiring private security guys with guns to protect them because they don't want to go bare. They don't want to be unprotected. So it's okay for them, but not okay for the average person walking the streets.
Yeah, and exactly, Patrick. So the places where the police are maligned or told to stand down, crime rate immediately spikes up. Criminals have no,
of course,
they have no care about getting a background check. They're not going to get one because they won't pass it. They're going to
They also don't need one because they can right. easily get these guns on the streets. No questions asked.
That's correct. So again, I don't know if it's just a generally speaking kind of a spiritually sick and morally bankrupt society, like society that, you know, starting to show these signs of deterioration. But I, you know, and I still fly a lot too, and I sympathize with the lady that was next to the inebriated man. I can defend myself. I'm big enough, strong enough to do it. But it's just not right. We don't need to be where we're threatened or intimidated or terrorized. And again, Patrick, I think a lot of people are saying, I'm not going to fall into that. And if I have to, I don't want to, but as a last resort, I will defend my family and my property.
I believe you're right about that, and how sad it is that the so-called leaders, our so-called superiors in public office, they just, some of them anyway, just don't seem to understand what's going on here. Anyway, maybe if they listen to this program more often, they might. Mike, thank you for your thoughtful contribution to the conversation. I appreciate that. We'll go now to Tom, waiting patiently in San Diego, a town I know very well. Hi, Tom.
Good morning, Patrick.
Yes, sir.
Patrick, the question I have for you has to do with Cain and Abel.
Okay.
Now, according to the according to Genesis, Cain and Abel, you know, were brothers. And yet when Abel presented his gift to God, God was obviously pleased and showed his pleasure with his gift, which was a new lamb, I believe. And yet when Cain presented his gift to God, which was in the form of
crop,
fruit of the land, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm familiar with the story. Let me interrupt, if I may. What's the question? I'm very familiar with the story. It's in Genesis chapter 4. So what are you leading up to, Tom?
The question is, why did, in your mind, God show pleasure with Adam, displeasure with Cain?
Okay. Fair question. Here's what the text says. In the course of time, verse 3 of chapter 4, in the course of time, Cain brought to the Lord an offering of the fruit of the ground, and Abel brought of the firstlings of his flock and of their fat portions. And the Lord had regard for Abel and his offering, but for Cain and his offering he had no regard. So Cain was very angry, and his countenance fell. Okay. Then we see the Lord said to Cain, "Why are you angry, and why has your countenance fallen? If you do well, will you not be accepted? And if you do not do well, sin is crouching at the door. Its desire is for you, but you must master it." So we see there, I think, a glimpse to the answer, and that is that there was something already about Cain that God, of course, knowing everything that can be known, he knew what was in Cain's heart. And he says, if you do well, won't you be accepted? That would suggest, it seems to me, that because he was not accepted, his offering was not accepted, that it was God's way of saying, you know, shape up and start doing well. So apparently there was something going on in Cain's life that led up to this incident that ultimately resulted in him killing his brother out of jealousy. So I think the answer to your question is found in verse 7. If you do well, will you not be accepted? And if you do not do well, sin is crouching at the door. And that's a kind of he's foretelling maybe, or at least we could see that in retrospect, that the sin that was crouching at the door waiting for him was the sin of jealousy, and that resulted in him killing his brother. Now, there's another, maybe more common way of answering the question, and that is that Cain offered a gift to the Lord that was not particularly valuable. Potatoes, carrots, onions, whatever. I mean, those you can easily replace. You can't as easily replace the life of an animal. So when Abel was sacrificing, let's say, a lamb, that's a life. And it's true that vegetables have life too, but not in the sense that the animals do. And it's a much lesser and less important kind of life. So that has always been part of the answer too. And that is that Cain was not giving from what he held dear. He was giving something that was easy to give as an offering, didn't really amount to very much. He wasn't giving the best that he had to God, whereas Abel was giving the best that he had to God. So I think between the two of those, that makes the most sense to me as to why God was not pleased with Cain. I hope that helps. I appreciate that. 888-914-9149. Let's go to David now in Southern California. Good morning, David.
Hello, Patrick.
Yes, you're on the air. Welcome.
Patrick, let me first tell you something about my taco store. So I live in a place where there's almond.
Did you say taco store?
Yeah.
Okay. Tell me more. I'm interested.
So I live in a place that's all Mexicans, but they close on Taco Tuesday.
Okay. So this is a store that you frequent, or this is a store that your family owns?
No, it's a taco store. They have some of the best tacos in town, but they close on Taco Tuesday.
Maybe we should have a conversation with them. Anyway, so tell me more. What is your question for me today? How old are you, David?
I'm pretty good. Like a couple months ago, I was going to have a tonsil surgery. Mm-hmm. And I received anointing of the sick, but later on, I found out I had a mortal sin. Would I have to go to confession today and tell the priest I received anointing of the sick was the mortal sin?
Did you know when you received the anointing of the sick that you had the mortal sin on your soul?
No, I only found out after.
Okay, because whatever it was that the sin was, you didn't realize it was a sin at first, and only later did you realize it was a sin? Is that what you mean?
It was kind of like a sin that I just didn't really want to tell a father.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't want to tell a priest because I was like embarrassed.
Sure.
But I already confessed it.
Okay, but you confessed it after you received anointing of the sick, right?
Yeah.
Okay. But I guess the question I'm asking you is that at the time that you received anointing of the sick, is that when you were kind of embarrassed and you didn't want to say anything about it?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, in this case, you did the right thing, first of all, by going to confession afterward. That's good, and I want to encourage you to keep doing that. You're young, and you didn't really know what to do, and obviously, if the priest is there and your family is there and you're not sure, what do I do, you know, because I'm kind of embarrassed, I don't think that God, if I had to guess, David, I don't think that God would say that you have a level of guilt the way somebody who might have if they were in a different situation. You didn't know what to do, so you just went forward with receiving the sacrament. So I don't think that you necessarily did anything sinful, but now that you know, and looking back on it now, in that case, I think, yes, it's a good idea to bring that up in confession and just let the priest know, bless me, Father, for I have sinned. It's been however long since my last confession. I received the sacrament of holy anointing when I was in the state of mortal sin, but everybody was there and I was embarrassed and I didn't know what to say to the priest, and I just received the sacrament and I look back on it now and I wish I had done things differently. He'll understand. God certainly understands. And by bringing it to confession, you can have that taken care of and you won't have to worry about that in the future.
Okay. Do you have time for one more question?
Sure, go ahead. And I asked you earlier how old you are, but I don't think you heard me.
Oh, sorry. I'm 13.
13, okay. Yes, what's your other question?
Well, this is kind of embarrassing and I don't really want people to judge me. Okay. But it's about the addiction to pornography and masturbation.
Okay.
So I'm wondering how to get over that.
Okay.
And I know many people will judge me, but I hope they don't.
Let me tell you something here. Do you know that a lot of people who might be tempted to judge you have the same problem? It's a very, very common problem, David. And it's very common for it to start for someone your age. So let's talk about that. So this is an addiction that can be overcome. As with all addictions, it can be overcome, but it's going to require work on your part, but you have to rely on God's grace. And thankfully, there are resources available that can help you. Did your mom and dad give you a smartphone? Do you have a smartphone?
No.
Okay, good. I'm happy to hear that. I was afraid you were going to say yes, because that's very often the conduit for this kind of thing to come into someone's life. What about a laptop or a computer that's connected to the internet? Do you have any access to that where you can be on your own without other people there?
Well, they have the password for a computer that I own and they always monitor, but I can get away with that.
Yeah, because you know how to get around it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes.
Okay, so you're a brave young man and I admire you for being willing to not only talk about this, but also to confront it. So here are some suggestions. If you were my son, this is what I would tell you. Number one, let your mom and dad know that you're having this struggle. Don't hide it from them. Let them know because they love you. And of all people in this world, David, those are the two people who don't need anything from you. They're not trying to get anything from you. All they want to do is love you and protect you and help you. So you can trust your parents to do the right thing. So let them know. And that's good for you because it will provide a level of accountability that if they're aware of the problem, they'll be able to, you know, check in with you. How are things going, David? How is your struggle? And that's a good role for your parents to play for you. I would encourage you to, number one, if you're using a computer for school and there are times when your mom and dad are not going to be in the room with you, nobody will be in the room with you. That, of course, is the most dangerous time when you're alone with a computer. So make sure to ask your parents to get some software on the computer. Do you have a pen handy? I'll give you a couple suggestions.
Hold on.
Okay.
Yeah, I have a pen.
Okay. So the first one is called Covenant Eyes. Covenant Eyes. And the second one is called Accountable to You. And the two is the number two. So Accountable to You. And this is the information you're going to give to your parents, okay? So tell them, tell them Mr. Madrid suggested that you give this to your parents. What they can do with the software is put it on whatever machine that you use to get on the internet. If it's a phone, if it's a tablet, if it's a laptop, what have you. And this will do two things. Number one, they can limit where you will go. And that's good because it's like you want a guardrail, right? If you're going to be driving up in a mountain, in the mountains, and there's a really steep drop off, you want a guardrail on the side of the road, don't you? Because if you were to drive over the edge, you die, right? So look at this as like a guardrail. It will protect you because it won't allow you to go to places that are filled with this kind of stuff. Second thing it's going to do is it will let your parents know if you've figured out a way to get around it. And, you know, you stumble and fall and you go look at a place, or you try to go look at a place. Well, it's going to send a message to your mom's cell phone right away in real time. And she's going to say, uh-oh, I need to call David and find out what's going on. And that's good because you want that kind of accountability. So that will be a way to prevent going down these roads. But you also need to understand how looking at pornography will rewire your brain. So I would get in touch with Matt Fradd. His last name is F-R-A-D-D, mattfradd.com. He's got some excellent videos and some books about pornography addiction and how to overcome it. And he himself will tell you that he had the same problem that you have right now when he was your age. And he overcame it. And he'll share with you how to do that. So will you relay these things to your parents for me, David?
Yeah, what's the name, Matt Pratt?
Matt Fradd, F-R-A-D-D, mattfradd.com. Thank you, David. Hang in there, buddy. And say your prayers and stay close to Jesus and the sacraments. I'll be right back. Notre Dame Federal Credit Union is a member of the Catholic Credit Unions of America. You can find more information and your local Catholic Credit Union at relevantradio.com/banking.
Get connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
All right. Nice music choice, Cyrus. Thank you. 888-914-9149. Just a quick word about the church's teaching on the anointing of the sick. This is important. This sacrament is often given when it's not really appropriate to be given. And just a kind of a quick nutshell description here, the church says that the sacrament of holy anointing, the sacrament of extreme unction, as it used to be called, is for people who, because of old age or some serious illness, they find that they are near death or they're in danger of death. So if you have a headache, you're not a candidate for the sacrament of anointing of the sick. If you have a bad cold, if you're getting your tonsils out, that's not something that would rise to that level. It's primarily for people, as the Catechism says, either because of old age or because of some serious illness, at whatever age, you don't have to be old, that you find yourself now in the proximity of the possibility of death. Doesn't mean that you're imminently going to die or that you've been diagnosed with some fatal disease, but there's some reasonable expectation that death could occur. That's when the time has come for holy anointing. And it seems that this is one of those sacraments that maybe a lot of people are not entirely sure when it's supposed to be given, and I just wanted to give you a little public service announcement on that point. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Joseph in Ellsworth, Maine. Hi, Joseph.
Hi, Patrick. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
The reason I'm calling today is I have, by all other standards, a beautiful, healthy, funny, amazing 13-year-old son. The reason I'm calling today is within the past year, he pretty much recently told me he doesn't believe in God. Mm-hmm. And I really feel the biggest regret I have as a father, pretty much in my life right now, is not bringing him to church when he was younger. Me and his mother were separated, so she doesn't believe the same things that I, she doesn't believe in God either, and it really is breaking my heart. I don't want to push, religion on him. I don't want to push everything on him. We've had discussions about it, and I just don't know what to do. As a father, as a Christian, I don't know what to do, so that's why I'm calling in today.
Before I offer you some suggestions about how you might want to deal with the situation with him, do you mind if I offer you a suggestion for yourself?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So my suggestion would be, if you haven't already done so, bring this to confession, because this is the sin of negligence. And it sounds as though if this was over a long period of time that you as his dad, who knew better, and if you didn't live up to your responsibilities in this area as his dad, then that's something really serious that you should bring to confession, if you haven't already done so. Maybe you have.
But yes, sir. Yes, sir. Okay.
Yeah. Now, I'm not here to grind on you. Don't misunderstand me, Joseph. I'm not trying to rebuke you. I'm just saying, if you want to get yourself in a position where you're going to be more effective in helping your son, that's a big first step right there. Okay?
Absolutely.
Okay. And then I would say, do penance for that. And make some kind of penitential dimension in your life that is aimed at trying to repair the damage that was done through neglect. Now, okay, enough about that. As for your son, this is more and more common now, where young people, they get a little taste of atheism or what passes for atheism, and they kind of like it. It's also liberating for them, at least in their own minds, because they think, oh, well, if God doesn't exist, I mean, then, you know, I can kind of do whatever I want to do, and there are going to be no eternal penalties involved. That's a very attractive idea, especially when you're 13 years old. I mean, that can be very attractive at any age, but there's a lot of appeal to young people when they consider that maybe God doesn't exist. So my advice would be to share with him let's start with some debates like the William Lane Craig debate with Christopher Hitchens, one of the foremost modern atheist apologists in recent years. He died some time ago. I'm quite certain he's no longer an atheist, but at the time he was a virulent atheist, and there was a debate held at BIOLA, which is a Protestant college in Southern California, BIOLA. If you look up the BIOLA debate on Does God Exist, you'll find it. It's very high quality. And William Lane Craig, he takes the Christian defense of the existence of God, and Christopher Hitchens takes the atheist position, and it does not go well for Christopher Hitchens. I mean, he's very urbane, and he's interesting to listen to, and he has a certain style, a certain panache that that works well for him. So I want to give credit where credit is due, but I think he gets destroyed in the debate by the arguments that William Lane Craig brings up, which are really basically Catholic arguments that have been around for a whole lot longer than Protestantism, but I'm happy to see even Protestants making use of them. So it's a very good debate. Why don't you watch it with your son, pop a bowl of popcorn, and say, hey, son, here's one of the top atheists in the world, and he's debating as Christian theist. Now, I'll bet you that your son has never even heard even a smidgen of the ways in which we can have reasonable certitude that God exists. That's one thing. Father Robert Spitzer has a great website called CredibleCatholic.com. I highly recommend it, and it's geared on this topic. How do you know that God exists, and how can you defend that? Now, your son, of course, is not defending it because he doesn't believe it, but Father Robert Spitzer's materials and his videos and things will help to present to him why you should believe that God exists. And then, of course, when it comes to YouTube videos, and what 13-year-old doesn't like YouTube videos, right? So I would suggest the videos by Father Mike Schmitz, where he too gets into this issue of the existence of God, and it's done in a way that would be, at the very least, interesting, if not appealing, to someone such as your son. Now, I can recommend so many other things, Joseph. I could recommend books to you. I would recommend, if I can be forgiven for recommending my own book, I co-authored with Kenneth Hensley. It's called The Godless Delusion, and that is a critique of atheism. And rather than give all the reasons why we believe in God, which others have done very capably, in this book, what Ken Hensley and I do is we turn the tables and we offer a critique of the atheist worldview. And for example, how can atheism account for immaterial realities such as love and memory and goodness and all of those things, not to mention truth itself? These are all immaterial realities Well, if the atheist worldview is correct, then the only things that exist are material things. There is no supernatural realm. So in that book, we help you show how you can critique atheism. And maybe even if your son didn't read it, maybe you could read it. So just a thought, but try some of those other ones. And now that you know what you need to do, be diligent. God bless you. I'll be right back.